Well, welcome you guys, and I notice you guys are like, you've got the DNA of the Vineyard. We've been going to Vineyard churches for about 25 years now. So if you didn't realize the Vineyard was around for 25 years, it has been. And you guys, I saw it happening when we showed up today. Church starts probably about 5 minutes after the time it's supposed to start. You know, that's like classic Vineyard. We took a quick tour upstairs and got to see and all the little bodies, the little kiddos here, like way cool. That also is just an important part of this. It just seems like life is happening all around you. So as we see all the young kids upstairs, I also saw a lot of friends. And frankly, I can't see anybody right now. So if I did this, we know actually a number of folks, and when we moved away to the Twin Cities from Duluth, we'd been like 15 years in Duluth to raise our three sons, and we'd said to each other, if we stayed in Duluth, we'd be going to this church, so we'd be like old news at this point around here. But Chris was a youth pastor for our three boys. What a huge contribution that you guys have made in our lives too. So thank you for that. So did you successfully spring forward this morning? Did you? For that lack of sleep, I hope the coffee can kind of offset some of the difference. But when spring shows up, I really get excited because we have more sunlight. We have more. That white stuff begins to melt, you know, and we actually get the chance to see good things coming. So spring, to me, is like, oh, just right around the corner is going to be that warmth and the growing stuff. And to me, summer is something that we do in our family for many years. Was a special part of what we did is we took road trips. Do you guys like road trips? Do you do those? I love taking road trips. And for us, road trips literally, we would take about 2 weeks. We would start the minivan, and we lived in that same metal can for 2 weeks and traveling around doing a big loop going somewhere. Janice had fabulous snacks, and she had, from the dollar store, every hour, the boys got to open a wrap present. And that's one way they actually kind of got through the craziness of hours and hours. And we're talking, I remember we'd listen to CDs, like books on CD, and I remember pulling up to a city in Oklahoma, having left Duluth, and we'd been on the road for 14, 16 hours that day, and whatever the story we were listening to was so awesome, nobody wanted to get out of the car and stretch. We were just listening. I think it was Tarzan here, whatever.
Finish the story.
Yeah, we can't stop now. So road trips are awesome because there's a lot of cool things that happen. We get to connect. We get to hang out together, and so we get to really share a lot of time. We get to have adventures. There were some wrong turns in our road trips that made memories that were just cool things that we would have never known about, okay? So we see things, we share stuff, we share stories, we share laughs. Some of our best memories about our family together came from the places we went and the things we did. It was really the together time. There are some things about road trips that are not so awesome. Anybody ever taken that road trip, okay?
And, that wrong turn.
Yeah, so there's wrong turns. There are breakdowns. We've had, I think, at least three times major repairs. Suspension stuff went wrong. A transmission was on the verge of being replaced. The air conditioning went out. We were in San Antonio, Texas in July. 105-degree day, and we decided we're driving home, and we're going to drive from midnight until about 7 in the morning just because it was like 25 degrees cooler. So we drove home with the windows down, you know, and that's a long drive. So road trips also then have some moments where things break down. Our personalities break down, or they come through because we're getting squeezed after 2 weeks in that same tin can together. And so road trips for us, we just thought about this morning as an interesting picture to help us have a look at what about relationships could they teach us, or is it just a metaphor that thinks about that we're trying to get somewhere and we're going somewhere together and there are things that happen on that journey. So we're going to talk today about marriage, and if you are married, I just hope this is helpful for some, not an exhaustive list of ideas about things we have learned, but some stuff that maybe would be helpful. If you're not married and you're single, and I heard Chris's podcast from last week, marriage is not the end-all point of whether or not you're a successful human. It is not the point of living on this earth, all right? If you get married and it's a blessing for you, awesome. If it's something that you want to see someday, that's cool too. But all of us are in relationships. So hopefully we can apply some of what we're talking about here today about that. So let's talk about the longest journey that we have been on. We have been on that journey for 33 years now. Yeah, one lady once... Yeah, and one lady met with us once, and they'd been married for 16 years, and she said, and it feels like 16 minutes underwater. So if you're getting married, you know, bring appropriate scuba gear with you. You're going to be down sometimes. Okay, so in our 33 years, about halfway through that point of our journey, good things have been happening, so... we're married. We're a close-knit team. We really enjoy doing life together. So a shared life. We saw good things happening. So we saw children. I saw a lot of kids upstairs. I'm assuming we have a lot of families sort of in that same niche of you've been together for enough years to produce some babies. And some of the things that happen along with that are a lot of joyful things. And career is a good thing that happens. We were involved in the three C's, children, career, and church planting. So has anybody here ever been part of a church plant? You can relate to some of the work that's involved in the starting of a new church, can't you? With all that is the joyful stuff, like the journey, but there's also sometimes the tiring stuff that comes and some of the byproducts of that to our journey. And why don't you talk a moment, Janice, about...
Yeah, so about 15 years into marriage, our kids were starting to be a little bit older, enough time for me to actually think a few thoughts of my own. And I realized I had put some things on the shelf that were a little bit hard to reconcile or figure out between us. And they never came off the shelf. They were starting to build up some resentments. And I realized even though we're getting the work done, we look good on the outside, we're congenial, some resentments had started building in me that even when he just walked in the room, I was mad at Dan all the time. And just starting to make some judgments about his character that just bothered me. And it was really hard to think about things I loved about Dan because all these negative things were starting to crowd in. And so we were sort of starting to feel stuck. Dan was starting to ask me once in a while, are you even glad to have me in the room? Are you glad to see me? And I really didn't want to answer that question because I felt... maybe not. And I didn't want to say that because I wanted to be in a loving, happy relationship. So we were starting to get our car headed in the wrong direction and feeling pretty stuck, like sort of a rut. And we tried lots of different things that we knew to do. But inside us, humanly speaking, our efforts were not good enough. And we didn't have it in us to get where we wanted to go. So we were going to Duluth Vineyard, and we were hearing a lot about God being there for us. And so we were like, okay, this is an area we're just going to talk to God about and ask him to help us. And so it really felt like we turned to God, and he gave us hope. And we really like that verse, Psalm 43:5. The first thing that we like to tell people is God has hope for you. And you want
to... Yeah, and hope is so essential because, you know, we're trying to do this thing. We're trying to do a relationship in our best strength, and we don't know sometimes. How many of you went into marriage and you had a complete roadmap about how to do it, you know? Or you're in a relationship and you know exactly what to do at every play, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have that. Even the best of roadmaps won't do that for you. Yeah. And so Psalm 43:5 was the beginning point of us saying, God, we don't know what to do. We're desperate here. We want to see something better than this. And the first thing that came to us was God was saying, let me come show you how to do life. And so the spark of hope showed up. And I think that's the beginning point. And no matter where you're at in your relationships, if you want to see something more happen, the beginning point, where does it say your hope is placed in this verse? Why are you downcast, O my soul? Put your hope in your... Yeah, it doesn't say put your hope in your surroundings. Put your hope in somebody else because other people are just as human as you are. And so there's this kind of this point where the surroundings can't deliver. If I put all my hope in the world around me, I'm going to lose hope. just from the bumps and bruises of life. Okay, so our hope, it begins in God. And then Janice began to discover some pieces of things.
Yeah, so I just, by accident, found this book. It was called...
She stole it from my mom.
We were visiting, road trip to his parents. The book was called Incompatibility, Grounds for a Great Marriage, and that really caught my attention because I really felt like we were super different from each other and maybe incompatible. And so I just started reading this book and realizing that our differences were not the enemy, and that that I could actually value the differences between us instead of feeling bad. So that was the beginning point, and that really was God starting to show us answers to the questions we were asking. God gave us hope for getting back on a great journey, and I decided I do not want to have that resentment. I want to feel love every time Dan walks into the room, and I really felt a little bit resentful toward that feeling that when you first get married, you're so in love, and people would tell us, and then that's going to go away, and you're just going to get in the rut of being married. And I was like, no, I want to be really in love and really happy to see Dan all the time. So that was my goal. That was the destination that I felt like our journey was headed for. And I feel like God gave us a roadmap to get there. And that's what some of these points that we want to share with you, our roadmap of how to get to that loving relationship healthy.
Yep. And so we're going to talk about just four building blocks, if you will, that could be like a foundation. So we're now mixing my metaphors. And I think that's against the rules for communication. Denny, isn't that the case? We're not supposed to do that for good speeches that we give.
The roadmap.
Right. So back to the roadmap.
Four intentional pieces to our roadmap.
Yeah. So these would be like just basic things that we've picked up along the way. If they're useful, grab onto them. If they're not, my email is chris.sauter at the send your complaints there. Okay. Yeah, so the key thing is what really seems to make a lifelong journey, that it's a rich and amazing journey. And God's basic plan he gave us is John 10:10. He said, I'm going to give you life to the full. All right. You look at your relationships and you're thinking, is there any place that something more would be? I want more life. I want to be better at this thing. I want to see it grow more. I hope you look at your relationship and see that. Okay. And I hope a lot of you are in a place where you're saying, I'm hopeful. I'm good for my marriage, but I want to see more. But the key thing is that we have to always stay intentional. You start out for a relationship and new love is like obsessed about the other person. You think about them. You plan how you're going to see them next. You're buying little gifts for them. You're trying to plan your life around them. I discovered that Janice memorized my mailbox number at college where you're in school. She knew my class schedule. She knew when I would be on the sidewalk walking a certain way, and ta-da, there she was.
Very intentional.
She wasn't asking me out for dates, but she kept appearing. Like it was magical. Yeah, you know, don't you, ladies? How do you kind of steer the course without telling the person that you're doing that, right? We're so thick, guys. We're just, yeah. So, but the point is there's an intentionality in love as it forms, and as we get busy, sometimes we get our intentions in other places. And so the key thing is we're going to be intentional in all four of these points we're going to talk about. So the first one, we want to learn how to build intentional love. So 1 John 4:16 says, and so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. Just look at those two words that jump out there. We know God's love. We rely on God's love like a lifeline, like a source. Like if we were underwater, that would be our breath. That's the kind of relying I feel when I read that, is the love of God is the source we rely on to help us do the things we do. So have you ever heard the picture of describing love as a love bank? Anybody familiar with that? Just like you have a bank and you have a place where you go, you deposit your money, you withdraw money, you do your transactions there. Your heart is like a love bank. And so therefore, as we do life together, we can do things that actually stir up more love. if we're intentional, and if I say things that are loving, I do things that are loving, those are deposits in the love bank.
Yeah.
If I act like a grump, those are withdrawals on the love bank. Maybe I'm just asking, can you help me go do something? And those can be withdrawals. But a love bank is a picture of that we have an intentional sense on how full are we? How are we doing at keeping the love quota, the love balance up and strong?
So you guys all know how to show love. But the one point we wanted to make about that is sometimes that we get so focused on the things that are annoying about the people around us, or just our disappointments, and those things get big in our mind. They're huge. We are focusing our attention on that, and we tend to say, I just need to change that thing that's annoying me or that's disappointing me or not good. And we found that sometimes it's not that easy to change the things you don't like. But if you focus on actually loving and filling that love bank, then the love becomes bigger than the things that are annoying you. And so then you also have more energy. Even the love kind of covers over the things that you're annoyed about. And so we just want to encourage you to focus on the love part.
And so when you're when you're loving, you're going to make sure that the love gets in. Just like when you go to the bank, you take a bag of money and throw it on the front step of the bank and drive away. How would you know it got into your account? How would you know someone else might have just grabbed it on the way? So you stay in line, you deposit it, you know it goes into your account, and what do you walk away with in your hand? You have a receipt, and it shows you what the balance is. You can be aware of exactly that it got in there. So when we give love to each other, one thing we try to do is make sure that the other person even had a clue we were loving. You ever did something nice for somebody and they totally missed it? And thinking, wow, I really was trying to make sure they felt this. They sensed that I was for them. So I have a story. I was one time cleaning up the garage, and the garage in our house, it was mine in the summertime and Janice's in the wintertime to park the car and get out of the elements. And so in the summertime, I was building golf clubs and storing my motorcycle and making a mess in there. So as the seasons turn in the fall, I would sweep it out. I would clean up the garage to get it ready to be Janice's place. And I was doing this thinking, you know, I really hate this chore. It's a nice day. I should be out playing golf. And I'm sacrificing. I'm laying my life down. I'm pushing this broom around. And something inside said, do this as an act of love. So Janice is nearby, and she's, I think, taking care of her fall gardening. And I yell out, honey, do you realize I'm loving you with this broom right now? She says, that's nice.
And inside my head, I'm thinking, aren't you just doing that because you need to? Because you ought to? And I realized that he was actually showing me an act of love by his service, and I was discounting it. I wasn't letting him actually fill my love bank. And so he was actually telling me, hey, I'm doing something, I want you to let the love in, and I was actually having to decide to receive that love and not reject it, not deflect it and say, oh yeah, but that's not really love. Or it made me realize that sometimes I actually deflect a lot of love, like compliments that he gives me, and I'll say, yeah, but you just have to say that, or yeah, but I'm really not that good. And anytime I tend to say, yeah, but I'm actually deflecting the love. And then later on, I'm thinking, oh, I just wish I felt loved. And then I realize, oh, that's because I didn't let the love in.
Totally a choice. It's totally a choice to make sure you're expressing love. So love languages, you probably heard about that before. You're expressing love that's meaningful. You're doing things that are meaningful. And that you're also aware that's happening. So, and I really wasn't looking for kudos, I don't think. You know?
Yeah. So we're clear with each other that when he says, I'm doing this to love you, or I do that, the answer is, yeah, thanks, I feel loved, rather than, oh, you're such a good, you know, husband. It's not for that. It's yes, you hit the mark, I feel loved.
So if the love is flowing, it's intentional, you know what's going on, you know about how we're doing. Once in a while, you're going to ask, how are we doing? What's the balance today, you know? And you guys, you ask your wife this, let me tell you, she knows exactly to the penny what the balance is, okay? And we need you, ladies, we need you to help us be aware, because you're probably more attuned to the to kind of how that's working. And so thank you. And remind us, even sometimes when we don't ask. The next one we're going to talk about is intentionally being in unity. And what is unity? We don't use that word a lot these days, so.
Yeah, Ephesians 4:3 says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Unity is important to God. Now, we were thinking about, you know, in Genesis, it talks about the two become one flesh. And that, for me, was a kind of weird picture. How do people become one person? And really, it's just talking about the unity that happens. And does unity happen that day that you say, I do? For us, we were still two completely different people and figuring out how to make this life work together. And we realized on that day, what happens is you commit to doing life together and to building unity, which means that we're joining into one team. And instead of going in two separate directions now, we're trying to do things together and enjoying life together. And that unity is a process. It's part of the journey.
Yeah, the day you say, I do, do you have unity and do you have all this communication stuff figured out? No, not at all. But you're basically saying, I do means I'm going to keep on doing this thing. I'm committing to keep with being intentional.
But in our culture, it feels like there's a lot about individuality. There's a lot about competition. And so we just want to mention, for us, we intentionally build unity. We've run into some people who say, you know, but I'm a little afraid of marriage because what about my individuality? And we just say, well, you have your own hobbies, your own interests, your own friends. I still have a lot of alone time being an introvert.
And Janice does not ask me to go to the ladies' knitting circle. She gets it. And I don't ask her to put on spandex and hop on road bikes with me where I go riding for long periods of time with a bunch of guys. So you kind of know where your space is. You have your own life. But the majority and the focus is going to be on a shared life. And that's what unity really is all about, is are we doing stuff that makes us intentionally do life together? Do we sit down to dinner and turn off the devices and talk to each other? Do we plan for, we try to go on a date once a week. So Wednesday night for us is date night. So if you call us that night, we'll probably be out somewhere. So
yeah, we even at first when we were helping with the church plant in the Twin Cities, we had two separate ministries. He would lead worship and I helped with kids because you just need all the bodies you can to be helping out. But when we moved to Duluth, we decided we need more intentionality about doing things together. So ministry was one of the areas that we had a choice about. And so I chose to not go my own separate way, but to actually join him on whatever ministry we did together. And when we had our kids, we actually did ministries together that our kids could help out in, because we wanted to include the family as much as possible. So a lot of times you don't have a choice, but for places that we do have a choice, we try to do things that are together.
And you know, there's this, if you just get a value that locks you deep inside that says, we're going to do this life together. Do you remember Moses? And he says to God, you know, here we are, we're in the wilderness. And he said, I will not move on unless I know you're with me. And that was kind of the attitude. I won't move forward unless your presence comes with me. And I think that's a picture of some of the attitude we want to share in a healthy relationship, is that I cannot move on. So moving on would be like maybe big decisions, big purchases, turns on where to go with career and life, or stepping into different ministries. Let's get together on the same page before we launch out and do this. And so I'm not going to move forward unless I know we're on board on this together.
Yeah, and the way that we do that is if you really want to buy something and I'm like, I don't think that's where we want to put our money right now, we just step back and we just ask God, we invite God into that spot and say, God, would you help us to be in unity? And we just wait until we just have this belief that God is interested in us being unified and help us to get and that he'll help us to get on the same page.
Yeah, and the time I was like all gung-ho to get a brand new road bike because I had my 30-year-old bike I was riding and I'm trying to keep up with these group of guys, she said, we can't do that. We don't have it. And then it just doesn't feel right. And just not too many months later, it's like, yeah, that feels right. That's when you're talking about. I got a way, way better bike. I don't know if Adam out there, can you appreciate that about Mr. Biking? If sometimes waiting means there's a better yes, but you got to be together to be on the same page.
So then competition is a really big deal. And we like to compete. We play games, and there's different things that competition is fine. But the idea in competition is usually that either I win or you win. It's not usually both of us. And one of my favorite Shel Silverstein poems is called Hug of War. Have you ever heard of that one? It's the idea that in marriage and unity, can we both win? And the hug of war goes, I'd rather play at hug of war, where everyone hugs instead of tugs, where everyone giggles and rolls on the rug, where everyone kisses, everyone grins, everyone cuddles, and everyone wins.
Now everybody, aww.
So unity is looking for both of us to win, which means when I'm feeling a preference and you're feeling a different preference, we don't try to push for our agenda. We try to find a common ground. And unity is not just taking turns. It's actually seeking to find the things that we both love. And it is a little bit of giving up your own way for the things that are common. Like, I don't spend all my time doing just what he likes to do, but we find things like he likes golf, I like, knitting or something like that, making things. But we also together both like playing tennis. So that's the one thing that we do together, and we try to make time for that so that we can do things together. Okay.
That's right. And, it comes down to it. You think about doing this shared life thing, is if you really, really feel frustrated that you don't get your way much of the time, is if you really always wanted your way, why would you pursue a relationship with someone else that takes this, okay? Together is better. And so in the equation, it may cause a shift in your thinking to stop and say, you know what, there's something in this better for me, but I'm going to have to slow down and set my specific agenda down here and clarify, okay, some of this I'll get to do, but some of this I won't, but the won't part is going to be better because it's a shared life together.
And there's plenty of things to do together.
Yeah, just a sidebar, this wasn't in our notes, but there, she said, there's an African proverb that says, if you want to go far, go alone. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And that is the picture of a shared life.
That's what I know.
That's a value. So let's look at our next point here in being intentional. We're going to learn about ourselves. We're going to learn about each other. So you're going to become a student intentionally of personality styles, of preferences, of you in particular as my spouse. And I'm going to study and learn about this because at first it doesn't quite make sense. Ephesians 4:2 says, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Humility just jumps off the page at me there because to me, humility is you're teachable, you're receptive. You're actually going to take in like something you might not have otherwise missed if you've been charging on. But you'd have to open up your sights and open up your senses to take in, what does my spouse think about this? How does this affect them? Okay, so there's one part of this, as you study each other, I want to talk about, and this is a basic building block that really helped us, and we've seen it help a lot of people, is discover what you need. Know exactly what inside of you is driving you. And we all as humans have a lot of needs. God put them in us. They are legitimate. There's two ways we can boil that down. We use the words security and significance. And we talked with someone before the service started, and they were reading a book, Love and Respect. Okay, and I think those are similar concepts. But security is this basic human need we all have to be able to know that we're loved. We can count on the love. We can feel safe and secure and trust. That love's going to be there for me tomorrow and the next day. So that's security needs. We all have it. Significance needs are the sense that what we're doing has meaning, that the stuff we do in life actually is making a difference, that we feel respected for the stuff we do. For the when we share an opinion, there's kind of a sense of that's valuable, okay? So we need both of those, all right? So when something goes wrong, and then say we have a situation that would arise, just remember, God put those needs in you, and it's important to dial into, what do I need right now? Because that may be having an effect on how you're doing and how you're doing together in your connection. You could be driving two different places.
Right. We found out that a lot of times we're having a hard time tracking with what each other's trying to say, or why are you having a difficulty with this? Because I'm thinking, we're okay, we're secure, and he's thinking, I'm having a difficulty here with the significance part, and I don't get it because I'm looking at, I feel safe, and he's looking at it from a totally different angle. And so when we found out that there are two different angles to looking at things, that helped us step back and realize, oh, so you're needing this and I'm needing the other thing. And it switches, but a lot of times I'm wanting to feel secure, and you're wanting to feel significant or valued, or
and the most important part of that is know what's going on inside of you for the most part. You know, just check in and say, what am I needing right now? What's going on? And with a lot of grace from God, we can actually step away from maybe we're having a disconnect. So that's going to be our last thing we're going to talk about, is how we do disconnects. But if we're in two different places, I can begin to I wonder what she needs right now. If I have a lot of the grace of God, isn't it tempting when somebody reacts at you to react back with the exact same thing? You just mirror back the same intensity or the same feeling that was coming at you. That's our natural defenses, right? We're going
to
talk about is how do you bring God into your disconnects? So if you're in a relationship, does anybody here have a relationship where you don't ever have disconnects? Yeah, the snicker that you probably couldn't hear on the recording was because people are thinking like, oh my gosh. So, we have, because two different wills are involved. So we have a disconnect going on. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 12, 14 and 15. Make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. The word that just jumps off the page to me is effort. Have you ever felt like your relationship is a bunch of work? Okay? So the writer of Hebrews says, make every effort. Be intentional. Keep up on it. Keep tending to it. Make every effort it will take to keep this sense of peace together. And what happens if we don't have peace? The last part of that verse tells you a bit of what was in Janice's story. There was a bitter root of resentment that if we don't deal with stuff, if we don't, you know, like we were putting things on the shelf and we were getting into a place where it wasn't healthy, because what happens if you put a piece of raw meat on the shelf and just sort of leave it there? It makes its presence known, doesn't it? You know, you just leave it alone long enough and the room is going to stink. Sometimes in our relationships, the stink is apparent, and we either have a lot of skill at ignoring it, or we have a lot of willingness to say, okay, I need to pull that off the shelf.
Or sometimes we just don't know what to do, which was where we were at.
Just feel stuck.
It was just hard things to bring up, and we just didn't have any answers. And so we've just found that we can bring God into that place where we feel stuck, and that he'll have wisdom and maybe some things to help us bring those disconnects off of the shelf and take the resentment away.
And one at a time. You know, you can't bring out all the laundry list about stuff that may not be okay to say, you know, it's like just take one and say, God, what's the one thing you want to go to? So the first point we want to make here, it says, don't let disconnects become resentments. Okay. The second one is, we're having a disconnect. You know, our beginning point is we're reacting. Okay. And it's pretty emotional. It may be we're angry or we're scared or we're hurt or whatever that is. But something comes up in us and it's a big reaction. It is so tempting for me to want to say to Janice, that was way over the top, honey. Well, I don't say honey at that point. You know, it's like, that was way over the top. That's you say that nicer. I mean, we would say that to our kids, all right? But it's like it totally like squashed the fact that that level of reaction was just simply saying, hey, something matters right now. This thing counts. It's hitting the radar pretty hard. The temptation is wanting to pull back because it's kind of tough to tune into it. But if anything, if we can take that first reaction and just simply say, wait a minute, I need to dial in. I don't want to put this on the shelf. I want to check
or
out.
Or defend yourself and just volley right back with the same high emotions.
Yep. So if you have a big reaction, we're going to talk about an opportunity you have with reactions that maybe it's different from what you've done before. But when a big reaction comes, like in your own self, just check in with yourself. There's three pieces I would say it's sort of like a journey down into your heart to find out what's happening. First of all, just let the reaction happen and don't feel guilty or like, oh man, I'm such a bad person. It's talking to you. It's trying to tell you something. This thing matters. So after you say, you know, what's going on in me, check in. What am I feeling right now? What's going off in me? Am I feeling disrespected? Am I feeling like I don't get a turn? Do I not feel loved right now? Okay, so let the event happen. What am I feeling? And go a step deeper into, and what do I need right now? And if you really dial it down, it's somewhere in those two arenas. Is it about my love need? Am I secure? Am I safe right now? Or is it about my need to feel like I'm respected and I count in this matter? It's just a simple little process you can walk through, but so important to get down to, wow, something's going on. What do I need? And that need is legitimate. It is from God. He put it in you. He means to meet your needs. What's Philippians say? My God is going to do what? He's going to meet your needs according to his riches and glory. He's going to hit the ball out of the park. He knows how to meet our needs. And what if my spouse can't meet my need right then? The need is still there, and I'm not going to ignore it. I'm not going to just push it down like, well, it doesn't really matter. No, it does matter, but I take it to Jesus for my beginning point, and I start to say, Jesus, I need you to come to this need. Would you tell me how much you love me right now? Remind me how much you put me on earth for this reason, to be here and to do this life, that you have value for me. And let Jesus begin to meet the need so we can go back to our spouse and actually say, how you doing? What do you need right now?
Right. And a lot of times thinking about how do we handle emotions, either my own emotions or his emotions, we found out that a lot of times he'll tell me something emotional that's happening, and I'm like, okay, how do you want me to respond? Because do you want me to tell you some advice, or do you want to just tell me how you're feeling and just leave it at that? Or I really needed to tell him what kind of response do you need from me? And he a lot of times if I would tell him what my feelings are, he would just walk away, and I would be like, wait a minute, you're not giving me any input here. And so I had to teach him how I wanted him to respond to my emotions. And
here's the deal. It wasn't the same thing she needed every time. It's like there's nothing simple about this, right? Have you ever, now I'm going to grossly categorize men and women for a minute. So, you know, again, Chris Sauter at the Vineyard. Ladies, have you ever just needed to process, just talk it out, sort it out, and he comes at you with solutions how to fix it? At least too soon, okay? The trick is sometimes she really wants me just to tell her, what can I do to fix this? And it's like, oh, what a relief. I don't have to like sit here and hand you Kleenexes for a while here. You know, Or sometimes she needs me to hand her Kleenexes, and so I just need to ask is what do you need at this moment?
Right. So that's kind of bringing in that third point, intentionally teach each other, learn from each other.
Yeah.
We don't know. Is this one of those times that I just want you to sit there, or this is one of those times that I need some advice? So that's part of extending grace to each other. And we want to address this, just the idea of is that first reaction that you have the real you? And am I going to hold you to that thing that you said? And we found out that that first reaction, you can pray, God, help me to be patient, or help me not be get so emotionally upset or whatever. But really what you're asking God to do is help you to react or take control of the emotion that happens. Because the emotion, we don't always have control over how we feel about something. We're passionate. We care about things. And so emotions just happen. But we can ask God to help us to step back and say, okay, I have a choice about what I'm going to do with this feeling now. So
with reactions, we're going to talk about that. Have you ever said anything during a reaction that you wish, oh, if I could just back up the tape? Could I get those words and pull them out of the air and throw them away as if they didn't happen? And sometimes we've had some friends that have said, no, what you say during a reaction is the real you, and that's the real truth that came through just now. And I think, oh, gosh, please no, because what comes out is just raw emotion. I'm just like blurting at that moment. And the cool thing is with a reaction, if we begin to give grace to each other, we can say, you know, that may not be the real end of the story here. That just sort of grabbed my attention. It's really all it did. And then DeGrace says, I'm going to offer you the chance to do a redo. So that words came out that way just now. And is that really kind of what your intent was? Because I have the sense of you're actually on my team and you love me. And that had some edge on it. Yeah, and I know that's not your heart that came through there. So a redo offers the possibility of saying, so what do you really need right now? And that's the redo, where we actually don't overwrite the reaction, but we don't let the reaction be the end of the story.
Yeah, so we go back to that number one, the foundation that we build on, building love, and we're going to go back to trust that love. So he'll say something that has a little hurtful edge on it, and I'm going to go back and say, wait a minute, you're on my team, you're not trying to win and make me lose, you actually probably didn't quite mean it that way. And so I've actually said to him, although most of the time I just think this, I think, I don't think you meant to hurt me just now. I wonder what's actually going on inside. There must be something more that's pulling at you, or something that we're disconnecting about that I'm not sure about. So I'll just say, I trust your love for me, and I'm just going to wait and see, and rather than just try to defend myself or just hit back with my own, you know, defenses.
So good habit to get in. Allow redos in your relationships, your friends at school, your roommate, your neighbor, your boss, your spouse, anybody. If they react, they're just being honest. It's just coming through. By the way, the one caveat is this does not excuse inappropriate reactions, okay? Verbal abusiveness, threats of some sort of harm or that you're not safe, okay? So that is not what we're saying here today. So keep that in mind, that you're responsible at the end of that discussion process to take care of yourself, to make sure you're safe. You're also responsible for the words you say to not put someone else where they feel in danger. Okay, so that's kind of a caveat we want to give there. But other reactions are usually helpful if we aren't afraid. We don't learn to be afraid of that, but we instead make a safe place to say, hey, let's sort this thing out. So last thing I want to mention is that sometimes God's going to, you begin to invite him into the situation. He's going to surprise you with a whole different look at it. And it may resolve the matter completely by just a whole different way to say that's what happened. And God will help you sometimes change your mind. The solution might simply be is just clarifying, oh, I don't need to look at it that way anymore. And it's over. So to in the interest of time, we just want to kind of recap real quick here. We've talked about that you can be intentional to bring God into relationships, okay? You can be intentional in your loving, all right? You can be intentional in being connected or shared or having a unified life. You can be intentional to be learning. Get a book on marriage or get a book that you do that looks at personality styles, but intentionally read and learn about your own personality type and understand, oh, that's kind of when I'm doing that, or that's when she's doing that. That's kind of what's going on. And then finally, you can be intentional to resolve disconnects when they're happening, and don't let them sit on the shelf because they won't go away. They need attention.
And the good news is we did get to that goal. I am happy to see Dan in it. And that pile of resentments that I could have named like maybe 25 things that I was super just disappointed about, God has just one by one taken all of those away. And so it doesn't mean we don't have any disagreements. He's still opposite personality from me and sees things differently. But God helped us to value each other and actually see the differences as beneficial to each other. Like the things that I don't like to do, amazingly he does, because he's total opposite of my personality. So we use each other's, not the right word, play off each other's strengths and take a lot of, well, it's a good team.
Well, yeah, and the journey is nowhere done, because I'm telling you, Friday night, I was thinking, okay, we got to apply a couple of these things, trying to figure out how we're going to talk together at a church on Sunday morning. And we're in complete disagreement on a couple of things. So we had to resolve some disconnects. We had to allow for some reactions, and she reacted at me. And I did this miraculous thing. I thought, oh, that must be really hard right now. Instead of jumping back at like, what? You promised to come help talk with me, you know. And so so we're applying this stuff like about 48 hours ago. Yeah. So let me tell you.
This is what we do. We stop and we bring God into it and say, yep, okay.
Never ending process. So what I'd like to do is why don't we all stand up together? And I don't know, hopefully maybe you got an idea or something you can do specifically. My hope is that the beginning point is we start to invite God to stir hope within us, okay? So what I'd like to do is right there where you're sitting, if you want to close your eyes, that's fine, but do you ever do a thing where you try to receive from God so you just turn your hand open and to receive from him? I would encourage you to extend your hands open, and we're going to go into a moment of prayer here. So Heavenly Father, right now, we want to receive from you. We want to get close to you, and we know that your word says you've given us everything we need for life and godliness. And in the places of our relationships, would you right now begin to highlight, Lord, where do you want to move? Where do you want to breathe life into us? Would you begin to birth hope that there's more, no matter where we're at, where our relationships are right now, God? Would you breathe hope and say, God, would you come? Because you're the cord of three strands. They're not easily broken. You're woven into it, this relationship. You then give us hope.
Yeah. And God, would you just fill our love banks so that we can help fill other people's love banks? God, would you just pour your love into us?
And you're the source of love, God. Your word says perfect love casts out fears, and fears is what keeps us apart from each other. So, Lord, we come to you to get perfect love, and then we go and share love with those that we love around us, God. So we invite you, would you remind us how complete and perfect your love is? And so we want to know and rely on your love. That makes the difference. So come, Holy Spirit, right now. Pour in your love.
God, those things that are in our lives that are just catching our focus and seem so big, God, you showed me that sometimes those things are so much in my focus, they look like they're the main thing that makes up my life right now. And you told me that I could just like zoom the lens out a little bit and see a bigger picture, that you are bigger than those things that I'm focusing on. And your power is bigger than those things. And so, God, would you just help each of us to see you as big, see you as having the power and making those difficult things not be our total life?
Thanks, God, you're our source. We're going to rely on you now. Amen. Amen. So, Nikki, you want to tell us where we're going next here?
take time to pray for each other. So if you're on the prayer ministry team, you guys can come on up. And thank you, Dan and Janice, for praying for us and speaking to us today. If you'd like some more prayer, if there's anything else going on in your either in your marriage or that just sparked something. A lot of times the Holy Spirit, that sense of whatever is feeling like, sometimes it just feels highlighted to me, a word or a phrase, go with it and come up and receive some prayer. Today, the people who are up here are trained to listen to you and then just pray very simply. We're going to worship for a little bit here too, so you're welcome to stay and worship too and receive some more from the Lord. Otherwise, have a wonderful Sunday and enjoy your weekend.